I mean, if you sit on the toilet backwards and you just put the computer on the shelf, there you go.
There you go, yeah.
It's perfect.
Oh my God.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Reccast, brought to you by the best deck building site on the web for the Commander format, EDH Rec. My name is Joey Schultz, and I'm joined today by my lovely co-hosts. First up, the speedster, whose article series takes you from 60 to 100, it's Matt Morgan.
Joey, did you know that I'm only going to play Magic Online now?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, playing in paper was pretty terrible lately.
That was the worst possible intro joke that has ever occurred in the history of not just Magic podcasts, but all podcasts ever. Let's next, the man whose articles remind you to look in the margins, Dana Roach.
Hello, I am Reddit's new best friend after my most recent article.
Yes, though your article contained nuance about Eternal Witness. Sometimes the internet can be a rough place for nuance. And I'm Joey Schultz, author of the Commander Showdown series. All these articles and more can be found at edhrec.com, along with some awesome featured community content, such as other Commander podcasts and gameplay videos. EDHREC itself is a fantastic deck-building resource that compiles data from decklists all over the internet to provide helpful recommendations for new Commander decks. And here on the EDHREC cast, we're going to give all that data a little more context. What's our topic this week, fellas?
The new Taysa, my lady.
Yeah, I'm genuinely speechless. I kind of had a suspicion that maybe the new Ravnica Allegiance set wouldn't give us as much fun stuff for Commander, given, you know, what we found from Guilds of Ravnica, where I didn't feel like we got too many fun treats for Commander. But Taysa Karlov, she has proven me wrong. She's amazing.
Yeah, she is super, super spicy. And I've said a couple times, I don't play very much black in my decks. And I've never in like my entire playing career built a purely black-white deck. That is going to change when Taysa comes out.
That is right. Matt, do you want to read the new Taysa Karlov for us just so everyone is clued in on what this new awesome legendary creature does?
Yeah, for sure. So Taysa is 2 white and a black for a legendary human advisor. She's a 2/4 and she has 2 different abilities. One, if a creature dying causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So you basically get to double down on your death triggers.
Death Harmonicon.
Death Harmonicon is a good way to put it, yes.
I would dare say she's probably better than the last Taysa.
Already?
Probably.
Just maybe, because we're not even done reading her. What's that second ability, Matt?
She has a second line of text that says, creature tokens you control have vigilance and lifelink.
Okay, that's good. Did you say she cost, was it 7 mana or 8 mana? Is that what it was?
She costs a whopping 4 mana.
No, she couldn't have. The last one was a far worse card and it cost 7 mana. This one must be 12 or 14, I would guess.
That protection from creatures is worth 5 mana, Dana. I guess.
She's definitely been all over the map. She started with a 3 cost, then she went to a 7 drop. Now she's a 4 drop that gives all of your tokens vigilance and lifelink and doubles your death triggers. What does she do? She does death. I'm totally in love with this new Taysa. And so today we wanted to discuss her and do a fun little deck tech about this upcoming legendary creature. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
I'm totally ready.
But of course, before we get started, I have to ask how your week was. And Matt, shout out to DM Cross on Praetor Magic. You recently guested on his stream.
I did. I popped in, streamed on Monday. The podcast should be going out on Thursday. So the day before you guys are hearing this, you already heard it. Let's be real. But I guested on Praetor Magic's podcast. We talked about the mechanics of Ravnica Allegiance. Just what we thought about it, how we thought they would play out, and kind of just sat around and talked Magic for an hour. And it was good. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Are there any particular things, any conclusions that you personally came to while on that? Like, what do you guys think of the new mechanics from Ravnica Allegiance?
So on the podcast, we ranked them all. We had a 1 to 5, and my top 3 I all really liked a lot. My number 4 I like, but just not near as much. And then my 5th one, which was Adapt, I just think was, it's not that interesting. You just put some counters. I like that you can use the counters as a resource, which is cool. But then I had Addendum, which, like I said, I like. I don't think it's a bad mechanic by any means, but I really like the rest of them. Then I had, oh my goodness, I'm drawing a blank on. Afterlife was my number 3. I like tokens. I think it's going to be a very powerful mechanic. Number 2 was Spectacle. I think that's going to enable a lot of just silly things to go on in Standard and maybe even Modern. We saw it today, actually, there was the new, what were people, the Popper Staple Lightning Bolt.
Oh, with Skewer the Critics?
Yes.
Yeah, that one's pretty messed up. And so that means your top mechanic was...
Riot.
Riot, yeah. Gruul knows what's up. They know how to bring the beats. And that's very on brand for you, definitely. Dana, do you think that your list would probably be a little different?
I like Afterlife quite a bit. Riot's, I think, probably the strongest mechanic. I would agree with that. But I don't know if it's particularly interesting or fun necessarily, but it does bring the power, so you really can't argue against that. So I would probably maybe knock Riot down one and maybe move Afterlife up. But other than that, I mostly agree with that breakdown. I felt like I just blanked the Azorius mechanic.
Addendum.
I like Addendum a lot in theory. It feels a little bit like Cypher was back in the Return of Ravnica block, where it was a cool mechanic, and they were really afraid to do anything too strong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So I don't know. Emergency power seems pretty powerful.
Yeah, and Standard especially. Matt, you were mentioning before the cast how like you can probably wheel into a Teferi, who then you can drop for free if you did the Addendum clause on Emergency mm-hmm. Power, so then you'll untap your lands and have a new suite of counterspells. Addendum is actually probably near the top of the list for me, just because I like mechanics that force control players to do more than just the typical draw-go strategy, so I do appreciate that on Addendum.
Yeah, I agree.
It forces you to think about what you're going to do, which I like. I know Riot does that, but I feel like Riot, the choice is very obvious most of the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is with Addendum.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of people are forgetting, on the podcast, a couple of the other hosts on there, they're saying you have to play it at sorcery speed, which you don't. You can do it with something on the stack. You can play emergency powers in response to somebody, you know, trying to counter a creature or anything like that. You don't have to play it as a sorcery. It just has to be during your main phase. And so that distinction, I think, is very much worth pointing out.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty interesting. I do like a lot of the mechanics. And as you guys mentioned, Afterlife, that Orzhov mechanic, the one that makes tokens after your creatures die, that blends absolutely beautifully with Tesa Karlov. They definitely designed her around that mechanic. It is so, so cool, because not only will she double the number of Afterlife triggers that you get, but she'll also give the tokens that are left over Vigilance and Lifelink. I think that's amazing. I just can't stop talking about Tesa, so how about we get to the deck tech?
Yes, indeed.
I suppose. I mean, if you're going to get this wound up, we might as well move on.
We might as well move on. Matt, you actually have put together a Tesa Karlov list, but it's kind of going in a bit of a different direction than where I personally would take a Tesa Karlov list. So I think it would be pretty fun to present maybe two different deck lists when this show goes out to show how versatile this new commander is.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Tesa has two different abilities, and they're not really overlapping by a whole lot. They might empower each other a little bit, but they're very distinct. One is your Death Harmonicon, if you will. And then the other one encourages you to play creature tokens. So they're going in very different directions. And I decided to focus on that first ability of death triggers. What can we do just to get value generated? There is a lot of a decent, you know, token sub theme for me. I do have Anointed Procession in the deck. I do have one card that I know I'm personally very, very excited about, Twilight Drover. I've wanted this card to work in so many decks, and it's never quite panned out. I think this is a perfect chance to play Twilight Drover. So that's a card that I'm, yeah, very excited to play. But my deck mostly centered around the Death Triggers ability. There's some very fun ones like Athreos, God of Passage. Whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless the opponent pays 3 life. So if they really want it to die, they have to pay 6 life because that ability is going to trigger twice. Stuff like that. So maximizing all the death triggers was the route that I decided to take, because there's a lot of really fun things that I haven't done in a deck before. And this seems like a really good chance to play some of those strategies.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Meanwhile, I actually wanted to go in a slightly different direction. I mean, y'all know me. I will, of course, have some death triggers going on in my particular deck, but I also really enjoyed seeing all of the ways that you could make tokens in this particular color pair as opposed to the usual green-white token-y color pair. So cards like Flesh Carver were really interesting to me. Flesh Carver, when it dies, it makes you a huge token equal to its power, and so then you'd be able to not just get multiple creatures off of the Flesh Carver trigger, but then those tokens would be more powerful because they would have Vigilance and Lifelink. So I wanted to go in a bit more of a tokeny direction, because Tesa also enables a bit more of that focus. So you've got more of the death triggers, I've got a bit more of the tokens, and I think it should be pretty fun to break these things down.
It should be. And to note, I do have Flesh Carver in my list as well, because when Taysa doubles the death triggers, Anointed Procession also doubles the amount of tokens. So when Flesh Carver dies,
beautiful.
You double the double.
Oh, beautiful. Ah, see, we cannot get enough of this. Dana, I hope it's fine if you just listen to us gush this entire podcast.
I can do that, because I'm a fan of both of these decks and both of the builds. And really, I mean, you're going to do slightly different things, but I think the deck is going to play somewhat similarly, even though you're going to be using quite a few different cards. And that's just going to be kind of a neat thing to watch.
Yeah, it should be really cool. So, Matt, let's get into some of the particulars of your list. You've mentioned a few already. We mentioned Fleshcarver. You mentioned Athreos, which is just a home run in a deck like this. But what are some other of those particular cards that have death triggers that you wanted to capitalize on with Taysa?
So two of them that I think people, and I was very tempted to challenge the stats on these two cards, but Grim Haruspex and Midnight Reaper, I think are going to be two cards that you're going to want as a backbone. They're kind of like Skullclamp, only obviously much more fair. But everyone knows what Skullclamp does. It's equipment for one, equipped creature gets +1/-1. Whenever equipped creature dies, draw two cards. So that's the ability that you want to double down. I mean, when a creature dies and you have Taysa out, you're drawing four cards, equipped cost of one, very, very powerful. But if you want those on a stick, you have Grim Haruspex and Midnight Reaper. So Grim Haruspex and Midnight Reaper both read, whenever a non-token creature you control dies, you draw a card. Midnight Reaper deals one damage to you, but they both will draw you a card, which you can double with Taysa. I think those two are just very good draw engines to go along with a lot of these different sac outlets that I tried to focus on. Viscera Seer, obviously, it's kind of the go-to for black black decks. One that I was kind of brewing with and I settled in and I really, really like, especially when you combine it with Haruspex and Midnight Reaper, is Sadistic Hypnotist. So what that is, it's three black for a 2/2 minion. It has the ability of you sacrifice a creature, target creature discards two cards from their hand, play this ability only when you could play a sorcery. So you have built-in hand disruption, a free sacrifice outlet to get your own triggers going, but then you're also messing with everybody else's game plan, which I think is very, very powerful, gets your death triggers going, and you obviously it's a five drop, so you're going to have a little bit of a board by the time you drop Sadistic Hypnotist as well. Those were just some of the general strategies that I tried to focus on as I got this, first draft going.
Yeah, and a few important things to note, because I think that there might be a little bit of confusion online, some of the folks that I've seen talking about Taysa. You mentioned Sadistic Hypnotist, which has the activated ability, sacrifice a creature, target player discards two cards from their hand, only as a sorcery.
Yes.
That, of course, is the activated ability, so that won't trigger an additional when you sacrifice a creature.
Correct.
And that's definitely an important thing to keep in mind. But yeah, it is still definitely pretty important. If you're capitalizing on a whole bunch of those creatures dying, then having ways to force them to die, which also then subsequently disrupt your opponents, is super, super important.
Yeah,
I'm looking through the list that you came up with, and there are a whole ton of fun cards that I hadn't considered that have really, really fun death triggers to take advantage of. So obviously, a good example is Solemn Simulacrum. It finds you a land when it enters, but it also draws you a card when it dies. Well, enter Taysa, now it'll draw you two cards. Along a similar vein, Filigree Familiar will draw you a card when it dies, and now that means that you would actually get to draw two cards for this little creature, so that's really, really cool to see. But you went even further and found some cards I've never even heard of. My favorite is probably Reliquary Monk. This is 2W for a 2/2 white creature. It's a cleric, and it says when it dies, you destroy target artifact or enchantment. What an awesome ability to be able to trigger two times.
Yeah, it's kind of a reverse Reclamation Sage. When Sage comes into play, it triggers. When Reliquary Monk dies, it triggers, and you get to double those, obviously, when you have Taysa out. And with a lot of the free death trigger enablers, like Sadistic Hypnotist, like Viscera Seer, like Phyrexian Altar even, because that's a fun new reprint we got for this deck, there's all sorts of just really cool stuff that, this deck actually probably is the best example of how powerful Scryfall is as a deck building resource. I used EDH Rec to kind of get a base layer. I just used Taysa Orzhov Scion as kind of a rough, 30 cards that I can get. And then I went to Scryfall and did some more digging. And that's where a lot of the juice came from with stuff like Belfry Spirit. That card is another one that I think is just crazy fun. But yeah, Reliquary Monk is another source of just how good Scryfall is at just finding some of these random cards that are played in 500 decks.
Right. Belfry Spirit is a really obscure one from the original Guild Pact set where Orzhov first made its debut that makes even more tokens and haunts creatures and makes more tokens. And that's definitely really cool. There's a ton of fun stuff happening here. Mm-hmm. Dana, are there any particular death triggers that are catching your eye in Matt's list?
A Reliquary Monk was the first one that jumped out at me, which we already mentioned. The second one was Grim Horrorspecs as well. I ran it in my taste of deck, and we mentioned this one, of course, as well. But like, as good as it was in my taste of deck, that card is going to be disgusting in this deck. It's going to be almost tutorable. You're going to play that and just draw all the cards. It's going to be amazing. So you found a lot of the ones that I would have thought of. And even things like Solemn Simulacrum, which again we mentioned, but Solemn's an easy one to say don't run in your deck. It was kind of a staple for a lot of years, and I think the game has kind of moved past it. Except for it's not here because of the double trigger. The double trigger makes Solemn once again a really, really viable card.
Yeah, super fun stuff. There's also some obscure cards that I haven't seen since like M12. Archon of Justice is jumping out to me here as well. That's 3 white for an Archon, 4/4 flying white creature. It says when it dies, exile target permanent. That is so cool. You'd get to exile 2 things if they get rid of your Archon. That's just really, really nice to be able to threaten people with. So capitalizing on all of those death triggers is super cool. And especially, Taysa is very cleverly worded. She says, if a creature dying causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, it triggers an additional time. But it doesn't need to be one of your creatures dying to cause one of your abilities to trigger. It just needs to be a creature dying. And you've got a bunch of other cards in this list that also capitalize on other people and their creatures dying, and mm-hmm. those are really fun too. One of the ones that jumps out to me there is the card Massacre Worm.
Yes, that card. That card and Phyrexian Obliterator. I when I first was playing Mega casually, I saw Massacre Worm and I saw Obliterator, and those two cards I just jammed into Dark Ritual decks because those things are so fun. But yeah, Massacre Worm, when you combine that with Taysa, is going to win people games.
Right. Whenever a creature an opponent controls is put into a graveyard from play, Massacre Worm makes them lose 2 life. And when it enters, it also gives your opponent stuff -2 until end of turn. So you can cause a bunch of their stuff to die, and then they would lose not just 2 life per creature, but 4 life per creature. Mm-hmm. And that's just gross. You've also got some amazing enchantments in here that I'll be stealing from my list as well, such as Black Market, which gets more counters on it to add more mana to your mana pool every time creatures die, which is cool. And a personal favorite of mine, Revel in Riches. Dude, that's just gross. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, you get a colorless treasure token that sacrifices for mana. And if you have 10 treasures at the beginning of your turn, you win the game. That is going to be so easy to stack up Revel in Riches with Taysa on the field. Assuming, of course, that your opponents ever let you do such a disgusting thing.
I don't think they're going to. Like, I've been very, very excited about this deck. But yeah, like Revel in Riches and Pitiless Plunderer, you just stack up treasures really quick. And again, Anointed Procession. Anointed Procession doubles treasure tokens when they come into play. It doesn't have to be a creature token, it's just any token. So Revel in Riches, it gets out of hand pretty quick. And one thing that you guys will notice in my decks, I'm not playing some of the mass removal stuff like Dictate of Erebos or Grave Pact. I got away from that because I didn't want it to get unfun for people. I wanted this to be a very powerful deck, a very synergistic deck, but I didn't want to get too carried away with just grinding everybody down and being oppressive. So I kept those out, but I did some silly things like Revel in Riches, like Divine Visitation. That's another, it is a token card, Joey. So I did give you a little bit of credence because this deck does make a lot of tokens on accident, just maybe not focuses it on as much as your list does. So yeah, right. I kind of stuck that way. Didn't get too down and dirty like I know I probably do sometimes. I am a mean man, allegedly. Mm-hmm. But I focus this
very
one on
mean indeed.
It's powerful, but it's also a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, I think this looks just absolutely fun to be able to play against. You're going to be making tokens incidentally, but you're also going to be capitalizing on so many fun, cool death effects that I just don't know if people are going to be able to keep up with that. So when we release the show, we'll obviously have a link to Matt's list, but we'll also take a moment to look over some of the stuff in the list that I would like to put forward, which goes a bit more along the more of the token-y theme. I'll certainly be keeping some of those death trigger-y things as well, but I'm a little more interested in the fact that all of our tokens get lifelink and vigilance, because I think that makes them really, really potent fighters. One of the particular cards that's jumping out to me as soon as I saw that was Crested Sunmare. Do you guys remember that one?
I do.
Makes a horse. Does it make a horse token? Is that what that one does?
Yeah, it's a bit like Angelic Accord, which Angelic Accord is an enchantment that says whenever you've gained 4 or more life at the end step, you'll get a 4/4 angel token. Well, that angel token will therefore have lifelink, which means that if it ever enters combat, I'll get another angel token, which I think is awesome. Along that same line, Crested Sunmare is a creature version that does sort of a similar thing. Crested Sunmare, 3 white white for a mythic 5/5 horse. It says that other horses you control have indestructible, and at the beginning of each end step, if you gained life this turn, you create a 5/5 white horse creature token. That sounds like so much fun, because all of your horsies will therefore have lifelink and vigilance, which makes them easier to go into combat and keep yourself protected. Plus, with that indestructible, there's no risk in getting in combat, and then they'll gain you more horses because they gained you more life. You've also got cards like Regna and Krav. Regna will do a similar thing. Every time that you gain life, you get more tokens, and more tokens will get you more life. That's the type of thing that I'm a bit more interested in here, is basically going infinite with tokens without actually going infinite. It just sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, and you have stuff like Fumigate, too, that can get you, you know, those 5-mana rests that we talk about. But that's going to get you a fair amount of life. I mean, there's some fun stuff in there.
There's actually, this was something, I'm glad that you brought up the board wipes. The removal suite that I'm putting together, I kind of want to go through it a little bit, because there are, Black-White is especially very, very good at being able to get rid of stuff. So I kind of wanted your guys' advice. There are a lot of mass removal spells that could easily run on a deck like this. Fumigate totally stands out because it destroys all creatures and gains you a life for each one of those. But you've also got really great staples such as Toxic Deluge. Then there's also Phyrexian Rebirth, which would make me a creature token for each creature that died. There's also Martial Coup, which could make a bunch of tokens and destroy everything else. But then we've also got really awesome flexible removal like Merciless Eviction and Austere Command. But like, I don't think that the deck necessarily warrants having all of those mass removal spells. So I kind of wanted to get your take on which of those removal spells that you think should make the final cut for a Taysa deck.
I think Deluge, with as much life gain as it sounds like you're going to be having between... I mean, obviously, you know, your big horse lord with Taysa, all your tokens. I think Deluge is going to be really good because it's going to be basically 3 mana and some incidental life loss that you're not going to care about really to wipe the board. I think Deluge is just going to be too good of a card with, like I said, an incidental life loss to not be running that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's the one. It's really 3 mana makes it really tough to pass up, and you can flex it around if you happen to have a big Krav out or something and no one else has a big creature. You can just do it for 4 or 5 and keep your beater up and take stuff out. Being able to flex it around the size of creatures is really useful too. So there's a lot of reasons to run Deluge, I think.
What about the others then? Like, if you had to pick maybe just 3 of those spells between Merciless Eviction, Fumigate, Austere Command, Martial Coup, Phyrexian Rebirth, and Toxic Deluge, which would be the 3 that make your cut for a Taysa deck?
All of them.
I think Eviction doesn't, I would say. I like Merciless Eviction a lot, but I think in a deck that's so concerned with death triggers, I think running something that you may have to use that's going to exile stuff. I love Exile, but I just think you're going to run into situations where you would get so much more value if it was just a board wipe versus exiling the creatures. Mm-hmm. And since you already have access to Austere Command, which is also going to let you flex around card types, I think I would run one of the 2, and it would be Austere Command over Merciless Eviction in this case.
I think that makes sense. That sounds like something.
I agree. Well, in Merciless Eviction, I mean, it's not a cheap card, and in Orzhov, I mean, we're not going to have the best mana ramp around. Mana. Yeah.
But so is Austere Command. I think you don't want both either, because you don't want 2 6 mana wipes. And I think if you're going to pick in this particular case, go with one that allows you to get your triggers still.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah. Austere Command is such a powerful card. Like, it's so flexible. There's so much you can do. Man, it's really hard for me not to want to run Austere Command in dang near any white deck in general.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I think also something that's important to note is that there's another really fun form of removal that Taysa is able to take advantage of because of her double death triggers. So you might even be able to lock down the board creatures-wise because of cards like Dictate of Erebos and Grave Pact.
Yeah.
Whenever one of your creatures dies, you'll make everyone else sacrifice something. But again, because one of your creatures died, Taysa is going to double that trigger, which means every time you lose a creature, everyone else loses 2 creatures. So you could keep the board clear that way, and that's really oppressive synergy.
Yeah, and you put it really well, oppressive synergy. I didn't put that in my list. I think it, especially against some newer players, that might get into unfun territory when you're doubling those triggers. But it is extremely powerful. It's very, very good.
The concern about that, and I guess it's entirely a playgroup thing, is sometimes you get that situation where when someone experiences that once or twice, oh man, I got locked out of that game. You know, the last two times from this deck with a Grave Pact, because it got down and he was making tokens and I just couldn't play any creatures, that can sometimes set up a player removal situation where, like, oh, it's that Taysa deck. I'm just going to go hard at this person to remove them. Otherwise, I'm going to get locked out of the game.
Yeah.
And can this deck handle that? I don't know if it can, but that might not be an issue either. It depends on the play group. So that's just one thing I think you want to watch. Are the people in your group going to just gun for you because they don't want to get soft locked?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Those cards are super, super mean.
The one other board wipe I would at least consider, it's expensive, but Decree of Pain, in this particular deck, since you were going to be making a lot of tokens, it's a greedy card. I fully admit it, but man, the decks where I run it, or see it cast, it almost always feels great when you wipe the board and then draw 17 cards or something stupid like that. I mean, and in this particular deck, when you manage to pull it off, you're going to be in just such a king position at that point. I would at least consider it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good call.
But like I said, it's super greedy. It is such a greedy card.
Yeah. At this point, also, just looking at some of the other possible token fun cards here, there's just so many. And some of them are also ones that were showing up in your list, Matt. Alenda the Dusk Rose is a really fun one. Who explodes into a bunch of vampires when she dies. There's also a slew of cards that make more tokens when creatures die. Ogre Slumlord comes to mind. Requiem Angel makes you spirit tokens when non-spirit creatures die. The OG Taysa is also doing a ton of fun stuff. I thought it might also be fun to take this one from your list. This is the card Murder Investigation. You want to read that one for us? Because I was really happy when you saw that one.
Yeah, Murder Investigation is one and a white for an enchantment aura, and it enchants a creature you control. Whenever enchanted creature dies, put X 1/1 white soldier creature tokens onto the battlefield, where X is the creature's power. That one is really gnarly, especially when you combine it with Alenda, so you're basically getting XX tokens, really.
Yeah, I mean, really, this deck is doing everything that I wanted Alenda to do as a commander, but since Alenda has to actually die to get her trigger, it makes it a little awkward since she doesn't go back to the command zone. But yeah, I'm absolutely all about this. There's a whole bunch of cards like that that can just get so super awesome, and I'm really excited to take advantage of them. There are a few others here as well to capitalize a bit more on those death triggers. I saw that you took the card Dead Man's Chest, which is so cool.
That card is so silly. It's so silly.
An enchantment aura for one and a black enchant creature an opponent controls. And when that creature dies, you exile cards equal to its power from the top of its owner's library. You may cast non-land cards from among them for as long as they remain exiled. And you can spend mana as though it was mana of any type to cast those spells. So you put it on someone's, I don't know, 4/4 or whatever. And then when it dies, you get 8 of their cards instead of just 4 of the cards. And you can play their cards. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an excellent card advantage spell in black because of Taysa. That's just so neat. So I'm going to be stealing that one from you for sure.
Yeah, that card, I really, really wanted to make it work. I tried it in my Muldrotha deck for a little bit, and it was fine. Like, there was so much that I was doing with my mana every turn that Dead Man's Chest was never great. But I think this deck might be a little different.
Matt, did you see the card Jar of Eyeballs?
I didn't think of that one, to be completely honest. I kind of forgot that was even a card for a little bit.
Yeah, so this is a pretty curious one, and I'm wondering whether you would run it. So Jar of Eyeballs, this is 3 mana for an artifact. It says, whenever a creature you control dies, put 2 eyeball counters on Jar of Eyeballs. Of course, Taysa would then make it 4. Then it has the ability, 3, tap, remove all eyeball counters from Jar of Eyeballs, and you look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the number of counters removed this way. You put one of them into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Do you think you would end up using that one in your death triggery Taysa?
It depends. I know I need to make some cuts in here, so I haven't gotten to play this against people, obviously, because Taysa hasn't come out yet, and neither have some of the new cards. I think that might be one of those first cards that I look to put in when I need to make some cuts on stuff that hasn't worked out. That might be, you know, that the 5 to 10 cards that we always talk about, you know, make a list of 120 cards, make 110 cards, and make some cuts. That might be in those, you know, 10 to 20 cards that I keep around because I want to try them out eventually.
Yeah. And then finally, one last note that I wanted to mention about my a bit more token-focused Taysa deck. One of the things that I did to try and put this deck together was to take a look at some other more token-y commanders, for example, Tristani or Rhys the Redeemed. And I you know, got a few ideas from that, from all of the white cards that can help make tokens. Elspeth Sun's Champion, for example, seems like just an excellent inclusion here because she can act both as a board wipe and can make even more tokens. But then another card that came to mind was also the card Rootborn Defenses. That's 2 and a white for an instant that makes all of your creatures indestructible and you populate, so you'd copy another one of your creature tokens. And that just seems like a total slam dunk that I don't think should go overlooked in a deck like this.
I think that's a... Rootborn Defenses is a good card that it's always one of those ones you're looking for a way to actually always have a way to use that populate trigger. And this is a deck where you're really consistently going to get something for that indestructible. You're going to get to make yourself indestructible and you're almost always going to get a populate. So that makes it much more attractive than maybe it is in some decks.
Now, Dana, I have to ask, since Matt has gone for a bit more of the death triggery Tesa, and I've gone for a bit more of the, you know, making tokens Tesa, which side of this debate, you know, which type of Tesa do you think you would be more attracted to build?
I would probably lean into the token one just because that was what my previous Tesa deck was, so that's kind of what's familiar to me. But I like both the lists. I like both the ideas, which I think is a really positive thing to say about a commander when you can make two kind of different decks and still have them be really interesting.
You hear that, Matt? He picked me. He picked me and my army of ghoul color geesas and spawning pits and quest for the grave lords. He picked me.
Yeah, but if we were making a bet, we know who would win that one. And we know who we would pick. Oh. So it's okay.
Well, so actually, that's another interesting question. You know, EDH Rec measures a whole bunch of data. Which of those two styles do you guys think would end up being more popular for Tesa? Do you think people will take her more in a token route or more in capitalizing on the Death Harmonicon ability?
That's a really good question.
I think the token version requires a little more, I don't want to say outside the box thinking, but it's not necessarily telegraphed so clearly on the card because it doesn't itself make tokens. So the death trigger thing, I think, is much easier for someone to look at and see and decide to go that route. So I would guess just by ease of use, people will more focus on the death triggers. It's also more unique. There's plenty of token commanders out there. This is the only one that doubles death triggers.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, too. Uniqueness is definitely an important thing when we're measuring all that data. People really like to see that, too. There's a few other, you know, pretty standard stuff to go over for the rest of a deck, you know, the veggies and stuff. So, Matt, do you want to describe some of the ramp spells that you're using in the deck too?
Yeah, sure can. So I talked about my Niv-Mizzet deck a couple weeks ago that I needed colored mana mana ramping. I had worn Power Stone and some cards like that. So I kept that in mind a little bit when I was building my Tesa deck. So I have some cards like Charcoal Diamond. 2 mana, comes into play tapped, adds black to your mana pool. Something simple like that is kind of where I took a lot of the focus. Obviously, I had your Soul Ring, had your Signet, but then I also wanted to make sure my death triggers were enabling some ramp, so I had Ashnod's Altar and Phyrexian Altar as well. Those are two cards that I think you're going to want in pretty much any Tesa deck, regardless of doing tokens or your death trigger route. So those were some of the big ones that I put in there. That's kind of a situation where I was hoping that maybe my card draw is going to overcome the lack of ramp in Orzhov colors. So yeah, I probably admittedly need a little bit more. I do like Orzhov Locket. The Locket cycle, I should say, all have impressed me with how they played so far. So I think that is definitely an include as well. But one new card that I hope is going to fill the ramp slot is Smothering Tithe.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that card is so fun. It's 3 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever an opponent draws a card, that player may pay 2. If the player doesn't, you create a colorless artifact treasure token with tap to sacrifice it to add 1 mana of any color. So again, Anointed Procession doubles your counters. So if they don't pay the 2, you're going to get 2 mana to use, basically Lotus Petals. But I'm very excited about that card and how that pays off in the deck.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good card in this deck.
Yeah, and I think a lot of folks will say, like, oh, a mono-white card that gives ramp, and they'll attribute the fact that that card is good just to that factor exclusively. But don't miss the important thing with that enchantment. That card scales with multiplayer, and that's what's important. Mm-hmm. Like, a Thran Dynamo will also give you, you know, approximately 3 mana when you're playing white, but that's not the thing there. This is a white card that scales to a multiplayer environment, and that's what's really important. It's a difference between, like, an Oblivion Ring and a Grasp of Fate. Scaling yes. to the other players is super, super important.
I would say, and it scales really well with Revel in Riches because it's making treasure tokens and I need treasure tokens to win the game.
Oh, yeah, that's a really gross sub theme.
Yeah, so the fun part is if I have Smothering Tithe and Reveling Riches out, I could untap and win the game right there on turn 5 or 6.
Yeah, that is, how do you say, gross. That's awesome.
Well, Matt, can I in the margins you here for 1 second?
Go.
Charcoal Diamond.
Uh-huh.
At 2 mana, comes into play tapped, and you can tap it to add a black to your mana pool.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, Cold Steel Heart costs 2 mana, enters battlefield tapped, and when it enters battlefield, you choose a color, and you can tap it to add 1 mana
that is
chosen color to your mana pool. So, worst case scenario, it can be set to black, just like Charcoal Diamond with absolutely no change, but it gives you the option to flex it to white if you need to.
Yeah. I think that one would probably be really good. And we talked about this actually after the cast last week, that should probably go in my Niv-Mizzet deck. My list, though, when you look at it, it's mostly black. There's a lot of black pips, and there isn't a lot. I think my only double white is at the 5-drop slot. And if I can't get double white by turn 5 or 6, then I need to work on my mana base in general a little bit more. So that's why I went with Charcoal Diamond. I probably should have both of them in there, to be honest, and probably Cold Steel Heart. Like I said, I think the ramp is probably the weakest aspect of my list specifically.
Well, it's also an easy one to skip out on when you get a new commander and you're all excited to make the deck.
I know.
It's not that much fun to put ramp cards in. You're like,
I'm just expecting to have Smothering Tithe on turn 2. Just turn 1 Sol Ring, turn 2 Smothering Tithe, or turn 3, I guess it would have to be turn 3, dang it. Turn 3 Smothering
Tithe.
Every
game, yeah. Oh, no, if you can manage that, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. For the ramp package that I wanted to go with, in my experience with playing any Orzhov deck, if you stumble, you can stumble pretty hard. And if the things like the Grim Horror Specs or the Midnight Reaper don't manage to stick and don't manage to get a bunch of their death triggers going on, that it can be tough to claw your way back into the game. So I really am a fan of the cards that you mentioned, like Orzhov Locket, which can help refuel you in case you ever stumble. So Orzhov Locket can sacrifice itself to draw you 2 cards. The same is true of Hedron Archive. I also really like Commander Sphere and Mindstone. So ramp spells that also can help double in that particular aspect, I was really a fan of for my particular list.
Yep. Yep, I agree.
There's also a pretty fun sort of a revival reanimator sub-theme running through your deck that I really appreciate. You've got cards like, I believe, Whisper, Blood Liturgist shows up in your deck, or Dread Return, things that help encourage death and bring back dead creatures since you're going to be sacrificing and recycling them so much. And as a necromancer myself, I'm so happy to see
there
that
it
in your
is.
Deck.
We got to hear it. Well, yeah, and a lot of the death triggers revolve around getting tokens out there. I have stuff like Pawn of Ulamog out, for example, Sifter of Skulls. So when stuff dies, I'm going to get little Eldrazi tokens. And that feeds in really, 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 really well with Whisper, because it doesn't have to be tokens, non-tokens, whatever. Whisper just wants to sacrifice 2 creatures to get a creature back. So Whisper is, I'm a big, big fan of Whisper. Dean Goody, go figure, got me, you know, some black cards to throw in the list as well. Folks, if you're not following Dean, at Grubfellow, He tweets every day with just such good ideas. And there's my challenge to stats is a Dean Goody special actually in this deck. And it's one that I'm in gold fishing. It's so good. But Whisper is one in that line of bringing stuff back. It's just super powerful. You get whatever you need back. If you want to get Alenda the Duskrose back, sacrifice 2 tokens to do it. You want to get one of my favorites, Demon of Dark Schemes back, sacrifice 2 tokens, and you get a little mini board wipe and start generating energy to reanimate even more, because Demon of Dark Schemes, you can pay 2 and 4 energy and you put a creature on the battlefield tapped. So stuff like that, just everything kind of feeds into it. I like the reanimator sub package in here. It's really neat. There's just so much going on, but it's all synergistic and all feeds into each other.
I think one creature that you both don't have in your lists and I think would really do a lot of good in these decks is Smothering Abomination.
That was actually my last cut.
Could you read that one for us? I don't think I remember it.
Smothering Abom is 2 and 2 black. It has Devoid, which will probably not be relevant that often. But it does have flying, which is not nothing for a 4-3 for 4 mana. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature. But whenever you sacrifice a creature, you draw a card. And I think in this deck, there's going to be plenty of times where you're just... I mean, it's going to draw you, you know, 4 or 5 cards a turn in some turns.
Yeah, that's certainly a good one. And sacrificing is a theme that's certainly, like, that's especially what a lot of the, I expect, Tace's theme page will look like. Is
yes.
Probably that subcategory aristocrats, since you're sacrificing so many of your creatures to get amazing benefits. Because actually, one of probably the most iconic cards that we haven't yet mentioned that will show up in basically all of these lists are Blood yep. Artist effects. Falconwrath Noble, Zulaport Cutthroat, those things that drain life from people every time your creatures die. The more tokens that you have, the more life drain triggers you can get. And so a card like that, that also encourages you to sacrifice your cards, so you're drawing cards and draining people's life every time that you... oh, goodness. It's just going to be so, so ridiculous. So that is especially a thing that we'll definitely see from all of these Tace lists. And I'll try and go a bit bigger with my tokens, a bit wider with my tokens, because I'm just happy to be able to get lifelinking vigilancy tokens as well. But it's going to be neat to capitalize on those death triggers. There's no way I'm going to be able to avoid it. Tace is too good at both of the things that she does.
And hey, if you guys want to live on the edge, run Dark Prophecy.
Is that another one that draws you cards when your creatures die?
Whenever a creature dies, take a damage and draw a card. I killed myself with that card several times in my Tace deck before I pulled it out, but it was always hilarious.
Yeah, combined with that and Midnight Reaper, and you could easily deck yourself yes. in a deck like this, or just run out of life first, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I have
makes
this
a good story.
I have this foil Midnight Reaper staring at me, which is another reason I wanted to put that in the deck, and that was one thing I was legitimately afraid of, is am I going to be able to gain enough life so that I don't die to Midnight Reaper? And so we'll see what happens, but yeah, I agree. The Blood Artist effects, Zulaport Cutthroat, those things, like, those are going to be in 90%+ of Tace decks.
And really, that gives a third way to build the deck if you want to just go aristocrats, which is not really what you're doing, Matt. You are just more focusing on the triggers, but that's another legit way you could build a deck that's probably quite a bit different than either the two you two are building.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Tace could easily be just a combo master.
Yeah.
So we mentioned a couple of cards that we expect will show up in a ton of Tace lists, but I think it's time for us to challenge the stats and look at some cards that we don't think will be very popular for Tace, but definitely should be. Dana, do you want to start us off?
I certainly can. The card I will be using this week is Helm of Possession. It's an artifact for 4 mana, and you may choose not to untap Helm of Possession during your upkeep, or during your untap, excuse me. You can spend 2 mana and tap it to sacrifice a creature and gain control of target creature as long as you control Helm of Possession and it remains tapped. So it's a sac outlet that lets you take something to then sacrifice, and then the next turn, do it again and do it again and do it again. It gives you sac fodder, removes stuff from other people, and it's. I was never sad to see it when I played the original Tace, and it's only in 1,500 decks, which always shocks me. It's the kind of card that even if you're not necessarily running a sac deck, just playing a token deck, it's almost always going to be worth trading your 1/1 token for the best creature that's not wearing Lightning Greaves. And in this deck, where you can then kill that creature if need be very frequently with an Azure's Altar or whatever, it's that much better, and it's going to get you death triggers if you need to. Yeah, I think it's just a really, really good card, and it's not in enough decks in general, and I bet it won't be in enough Tace decks.
What is this card? I have never seen this before. I am in love.
I think it's out of Weatherlight, I believe. Is that correct?
Weatherlight or Stronghold? One of those. Set symbols had colors to it. They were all commons.
This thing's amazing. Sacrifice a creature to gain control of another creature, and you can untap it to sacrifice another creature. Yeah, as long as you've got a bunch of tokens. What an amazing slam dunk. Dana, well done. I love that we're all converting to the to the death track that Joey loves so much.
You know,
Necromancy Unite.
It's not a cheap card. It is, you know, $4 for a near mint one, but that's also not outrageous necessarily in Commander. $4 for a lot of cards is bargain. So it's not nothing, but it's not terrible. Yeah, I do like it a lot.
That is so, so cool. I really like this find. I'd never heard of it, and I'm so excited to try it. Matt, how about your challenge stats?
So mine, like I said, is Dean Goody gets all credit for this one. So one card that I was really tempted to put in, but I didn't want to because it is very unfun. It's along those Dictated Erebos lines, but a Shieldred Wrispering one. It's terribly great and powerful and awesome, but it's not really terribly fun to play against. So one thing that I like about the reanimation aspect of that, you can actually get on another card called Dawn of the Dead, which is 2 and BBB for an enchantment from Torment, so not quite as old as Dana's pick. And I had never heard of this card, but it reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life. It's pretty terrible, but moving on. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may return target creature card from your graveyard to play. That creature gains haste until end of turn. Remove it from the game at the end of turn. So because it has the old templating, you can sacrifice it and it doesn't go away permanently. It changes zones. It goes from the battlefield back to the graveyard. So you can just bring it back every turn with haste. It's a great reanimation engine, really. That's what it is. And it's not near as unfun because people can't keep cards on the board. It's something that's going to keep bringing your stuff back. It's going to further your game plan. Not so much make it so that people, like Dana said, people don't want to play against this deck anymore, or they target you, even worse, so that you don't get to play this five-drop enchantment. It's something that I think is very, very fun. It's in the lines of Whisper. It's going to get your engine going. It's going to get you lots of death triggers. And it gets, you know, you can bring a big thing out with haste. Say you want to bring a Massacre Worm out, wipe their board, swing for six, and then sacrifice it, you know, before it goes away. That's all, you know, very, very viable things. Dawn of the Dead is not played in very many decks at all. It doesn't show up on Tace's page at all. But yeah, so Dawn of the Dead actually only shows up in 543 decks total right now. If you play that, you're going to get props for finding some unheard of card. And it's just a great reanimation engine.
That is definitely a cool trick, because you're right. If you sacrifice it before that exile clause would occur, then you don't have to exile anything. So yeah, that exile clause can super scare people because they don't want to lose the creature if they're trying to reanimate their stuff. But yeah, can you imagine reviving a Grave Titan, getting two zombie tokens, attacking with the Grave Titan, getting two more zombie tokens, and then sacrificing your Grave Titan to do it all again on the next turn? Mm-hmm. As long as you play around the card correctly, you're going to get just so much value. So I like that pick a lot too.
Very much.
And just the ability to have haste in Orsav is not something to be cavalier about either. That's a really big deal because it's so unexpected.
Yeah, that's also very true. Yeah, I like our picks this week. We're going to finish up with mine.
What about that your pick, Joey?
Yeah, my pick is the card Archangel of Thune. Probably a little bit more well-known, but I think it's a really good pick for Taysa as well, especially if you're going along the token-y route a bit more that I would do. Archangel of Thune, 3WW for a 3/4 angel with flying and lifelink, and it says whenever you gain life, you put a +1 counter on each creature you control. Since Taysa gives all of your tokens lifelink, whenever you got your Archangel of Thune out, your entire board has the potential to anthem itself up a whole bunch because of all of the life that you'll be gaining. And I think that's some really cool secret tech that people are not going to see coming, but once it's on the battlefield, they're going to be super, super afraid of.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, there are just a ton of cool, tiny tricks that you can play around, whether you're, you know, Helm of Possessioning someone's stuff by sacrificing the stuff that you are already going to sacrifice, or you're reviving stuff to sacrifice that too, or you're powering up all of your tokens because of the awesome lifelinking vigilance that they get. Taysa just has so many cool directions. I'm really, really excited to get this deck and to start, you know, actually playing it. I think this is an excellent commander. And listeners, I kind of want to know, which direction would you take Taysa? More in a combo strategy, more along Matt's, you know, capitalizing on those death triggers, aristocrats-ish, or more on the token sense? Like, what is the most interesting build path for Taysa for you?
We can put it to a poll. We can put that out on the Twitters.
I think that sounds like a lot of fun. We'll make sure that when we post the show, we'll put a poll out there because I'm definitely interested to see what happens with this awesome lady. And we'll make sure that we put out both of the lists that Matt and that I come up with. And Dana, you'll have to decide which of those lists you think is more superior than the other.
I can be the Grand Arbiter.
That's... No, that's a different card. That's an Azorius.
Okay, all right.
That makes Thopters, though. So there you go.
Alrighty. Is there anything else that we want to mention before we wrap up this week's show?
Taysa's cool, in case you couldn't tell. It makes Matt talk about death. And I'm not a necromancer myself, but I do appreciate a fun commander when I see one.
I will say, I think as part of our New Year's resolutions and challenging ourselves, talking about trying different decks out, and since we're discussing Orzhov stuff here today, I think I am going to put together a Slaanesh Dark Angel life swap deck. It's way out of my wheelhouse. So I think that's what I'm going to try. And, you know, we're talking Orzhov, so I'm kind of in that mood as well. So I think that's something I'll be talking about here in a few weeks. Once I get it together and test it out, I'll let you guys know how that worked.
Are you going to do like the hatred route with like Axis of Mortality, is it?
Yeah, there's that. You know, there's Mirror Universe. There's a few different things that let you swap life out. You know,
Mirror Universe, huh?
Yeah.
That's a throwback.
Ad nauseum. There's some old stuff I can dig out. And there's also that new card that got spoiled, whose name escapes me, that single black one where you can put counters on it whenever you sacrifice life.
Yes.
We'll discuss it next week because we've both forgotten the name apparently. So yeah, that was kind of the thing that put me over the top to decide to finally do that. So
yeah, we'll definitely get to a bunch of those fun new cards that are coming out in our set review next episode. I am really excited for this set. I was kind of, you know, after the first Return to Ravnica set, I was like, there wasn't a whole lot here. But I think that Taysa and other cards like it are certainly a nice indicator that we're getting some really, really fun stuff. So I'm excited for all of this to happen. And Orzhov is really stealing my heart. I mean, I'm going to be a Golgari guy for life, but Orzhov is super impressing me too. So I'm really happy to be seeing all this stuff. With that, I think we're going to call this episode to a close. I'd like to thank my co-host so much for joining me. And if any of our listeners would like to get in touch with us, where can they find you all? Matt?
You can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55.
And Dana?
You can find me on the Twitterverse at Dana Roach. And you can hear me once a week on my other podcast, CMDR Central.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter. Special thanks to our editor for the show, Ken Peddle, also known as Kenish Norn. You can follow him on Twitter at Loader. That's LOAD3R. Follow EDH Rec and the cast on Facebook and Twitter. We're doing a giveaway when EDH Rec gets 5,000 likes and when the cast gets 1,000 followers on Twitter. We're about 150 away, so head on over there to smash those like buttons for a chance at a cool prize, and we should be announcing what that prize will be next week on our set review. You can contact us at edhreccast@gmail.com, and you can find us on iTunes. And if you do, please consider leaving us a review to help other folks find the podcast too. This cast is posted every week on EDH Rec's community content spotlight section, where we feature as many other content creators as we can, from Command Zone to Commander's Brew to Commander Versus, not to mention new articles published every day by our own fantastic team of writers. We'll be back at you next week with more data and insights, but until then, remember, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.
You follow the Thoughts of Dog on Twitter, right, Joey?
Hell yes, I follow Thoughts of
Dog
on Twitter.
Every time that it's talking about the tippy-tapping, I just think of Monty.
It's because he's the best dog. He needs to learn when not to walk on when doing a podcast, but he's the best dog.